Well, folks, on this week's show, we roll out into the Transformers franchise and give our thoughts on the newest entry and put our rankings on this franchise that is more than meets the eye. This newest entry, Transformers Rise of the Beast, is directed by Creed II's Stephen Caple Jr., stars Anthony Ramos, Dominique Fishback, and features vocal performances from, of course, Peter Cullen, Ron Perlman, the Dinklage himself, Peter yes. Dinklage, Michelle Yeoh, and Pete Davidson. But before we get into your extra movie butter, folks, it's time for the movie news. And as always, we break down the box office. This week's box office wasn't quite dominated by one movie. You had kind of an equal share of the pot here. Transformers Rise of the Beast jumped out with $61 million. They were the front runners, but not by much. That $61 million, now, where Transformers always makes their money, they, to right now, they may have made $120 million globally just in the 4 days that it's been released. As usual, Transformers has a huge global box office. But as far as domestic goes, Rise of the Beast, $61 million. Coming in at number two, Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse with $55 million. That was close. Good weekend for the second weekend for Spider-Man. The Little Mermaid still plugging along with $22 million. Guardians of the Galaxy, Volume 3, coming in fourth place with another $7 million. That's $800 million worldwide. This for sure is going to cross $1 billion, right?
It looks like it. I mean, yeah, which I think Marvel kind of needs. It might have a little trouble getting there just because there's so many hit movies coming out right now. And like you said earlier, Transformers is a international movie that really plays well internationally. And Fast X also making money overseas. So
yep.
I'll be curious to see if Guardians gets there. I think Marvel really wants it too, though.
Wrapping out your top 10, you have The Boogeyman at number 5, Fast X number 6, Mario still plugging away. Mario on streaming services, people still going to see it in movies in the top 10. About My Father, The Machine, and rounding out your top 10 is Past Lives. And I'm going to let JTE talk a little bit about the box office, but also you've seen Past Lives and the rumor has it this is an early Oscar contender, yeah?
Yeah, I think people, Variety actually said that they predicted it'll be one of the, if the, you know, there's up to 10 Best Picture nominees, and they're saying this will, they predicted it will be one of the top 10. It is a very small, intimate film. It is counter-programming to the movies I've been watching lately, like The Flash, Across the Spider-Verse, Transformers, but it's a really good movie. It's one of the best films of the year. Now, is it something that, you know, I was super excited to go see in the theater like I am when I go see Flash? No, but it's nice to have something that is so grounded. And a lot of times when it comes to these movies, that's about, it's about relationships and, you know, people's lives and how they could have taken a different road. The most important thing is that when you're watching those kind of movies, that the actors feel genuine. And I think this movie never feels like, it didn't feel like I was watching people acting, actually. It felt like I was watching a genuine emotion and struggle and even humor throughout the film. And I think there's really three actors in the whole movie, the three main actors. It's a husband, wife, and her childhood friend who she kind of just left when she was like 10 or 12 years old. They had like, you know, cute little date. Then she moves to America basically, and he stays in Korea. And it's about those relationships that, you know, even though you haven't seen each other in 12 years or 24 years, part of it will always be part of you because of the connection you made, even though you guys were so young. But it's based on a first-time director. I think she's a playwright. And the dialogue is really good in this film. The emotion feels genuine. And that's the main word I want to really use is genuine. Because I really felt like in the short amount of time that I was watching this movie, I understood who the characters were, what they were struggling with, the feelings that they were going through. And it never felt hokey or it never felt like over the top or, you know, like a soap opera type or romantic comedy kind of way. It felt very genuine with its emotions and its dialogue. So very good film, counter-programming. Check it out.
I agree that after you've gone through a lot of these popcorn movies, you need that really emotional palate cleanser. Like in between Into the Spider-Verse and Transformers this week, like I had to pop on Police Academy 5 because I just needed that grounded experience to bring me back down, you know?
I would have went with Citizens on Patrol if you really wanted that grounded feel for me. I think that's the most in touch with the people. And it's more about people changing their lives from a negative stature to a place of law enforcement and bring it back to the community.
But, is 5 the mission to Moscow?
No, that's 7. Okay. 5 is assignment Miami Beach.
You know what? I don't mind assignment. You lose to Gutenberg, which I understand is a huge loss. But still, I think that movie does pretty well for the franchise. The guy who stars in it, I don't know his name, but he did a couple other things. That wasn't the only thing he did. He popped up in a couple other things. I just can't remember what.
It's like the guy who played RoboCop in RoboCop 3. I know his name, but nobody else does.
Oh, I think he was in Seinfeld. I think he played a guy in Seinfeld. I think he had a reoccurring character in Seinfeld. I'm pretty sure. Yeah, he did. He was the guy who went to the mental institution. And he was best friends with Kramer. I think that's the same actor.
It's funny enough because as I was looking this guy up, the guy's name is Robert John Burke.
Okay.
Wakanda Forever. And I was like, what? And then he was like the first guy that jumps over when like all the fish people are singing. But your guys' thoughts on this box office. I mean, there's always a big slice of the pie, right? And this weekend, it seemed like everybody was taking a little bit for themselves. There wasn't one clear front runner. And I thought Transformers Rise of the Beast was going to do an awful lot more than what it did. There are still some heavy hitters right now at the box office, still blockbusters currently right now at the box office. So curious your guys' thoughts, any surprises here?
I think Transformers actually came in at like the higher end of what it was tracking. I think they were originally tracking it in like the $40 million range. So it actually went over its expectations, if I'm remembering correct. But I think it shows that if you're putting out quality movies post-pandemic, people will show up. And this is just me personally. I don't think there's been like last year, I didn't feel like there were a ton of movies that you wanted to go back and see twice. And, you know, these box office results with Little Mermaid, Guardians 3, they're showing that if you make a really quality movie, people are going to come out multiple times. And Mario, like, if you put something out there that a parent can take their 5-year-old to get them to shut up for 2 hours, they're going to come out whether it's on streaming or not. So I think it's a good sign that the box office is finally really getting back from the pandemic, that people are going out multiple times. So I'm really happy to see the box office because I think really, I don't think there are any horrible movies. I've not seen The Boogeyman, but of the other movies in the top 5, all of them are decent to great in my opinion.
Yeah, you know, Transformers did better than Bumblebee, which was a better reviewed film. And I think what we're seeing is word of mouth with these films also plays a big part. Across the Spider-Verse had a huge word of mouth. And that's why it was competing with Transformers, a new release, to get that number one spot because of the quality of that film and the hype around that film and dialogue around that film. Transformers, I think one of the reasons it actually did better is because Bumblebee was really good. A lot of people consider Bumblebee their favorite Transformers movie, and it is the highest rated Transformers movie. So again, you're coming off of the success of that. And one thing in Hollywood, if you make a good movie, people will show up for the sequel. It's when your sequels get really bad that people stop coming back to them. And Transformers learned that the hard way.
Well, sad to say, but yet again, we are going to have to discuss another passing of another great movie star. This time around, today just happened right before we came on the show, we started talking about it. Treat Williams sadly has passed away at 71 years old, not from any disease. He died in a motorcycle accident, tragically enough. And so between the three of us, we started to talk about our favorite Treat Williams movies, and I'm a huge defender and fan of Billy Zane's The Phantom. Treat Williams was the bad guy in The Phantom. And so I always remember him from there. But your guys' thoughts on the early passing of Treat Williams?
Yeah, he was 71. Deep Rising is a film that is near and dear to my heart. I saw it in theaters. I remember going with my aunt, my uncle, and my cousin to go see it. It's this big, dumb creature feature. Great, like, back of the DVD description. Basically a luxury liner of, like, rich people. Basically, think the Titanic. A mercenary team goes on there to rob. So it's kind of like a heist movie at first. They're going to rob the cruise ship, and they get on the cruise ship and it's completely empty. There's like, looks like there was a tussle or some sort of something happened. And you're watching the movie. You're like, what is happening? But what they don't know, what the audience sees, was the ship was attacked by some sort of creature from underneath the water. And it becomes this weird, like, aliens meets the Kraken.
Yeah.
Like, I don't even know how to describe it. But it's done in the most tongue-in-cheek fun way. And it's from Stephen Sommers, who also directed The Mummy. You watch The Mummy Returns, and G.I. Joe, and you watch this movie, and his sensibilities are there. It's very big, very loud, and very over the top. Treat Williams is great in the lead role, opposite Finke Jensen, and he does exactly what he's supposed to do. He's kind of like in his Bruce Campbell mode. He's a tough guy, but he's also kicking one-liners and being funny in the most inappropriate times. So I really love Deep Rising. I have the Blu-ray special edition. I love it. I love watching it. I just revisited it not that long ago because I think the Blu-ray just came out last year, the new edition. So I revisited not too long ago. He's great in it. He's an actor who always popped up. He's always good. He always delivered. He was always really funny and charming. And he's not a big movie star. He's not a household name. But if you love movies and you grew up in the 80s and 90s, watching B movies, and you know, he would come up in A movies in supporting roles like The Phantom. He always was charming and delivered, in my opinion. So rest in peace, Treat.
Well, first off, I apparently have to find this movie and watch it tonight. This sounds amazing to me.
I am shocked.
Yeah.
You are the king of bad movies. I am shocked. You're not wearing a Deep Rising t-shirt this week right now.
Yeah, I don't know if it's streaming anywhere. It's got to be streaming somewhere. Check Tubi or something.
I'll find it.
Watch it immediately.
Watch it immediately. I saw that movie in theaters, believe it or not. Same.
Treat Williams, the first movie that always comes to mind for me is 1941, just because I have, you know, a soft spot for semi-raunchy 80s comedies. But I kind of feel like Treat Williams, Fred Ward, Tim Matheson, they always were sort of competing for like this handsome yet creepy guy in the background of 80s and early 90s movies. And the only one we got left is Tim Matheson, man. So it's always sad when you're seeing like these people that were part of the background of what made you fall in love with movies sort of disappearing as you get older. But, you know, the best to his family, and, you know, thank him for the entertainment that he gave.
Yeah, it is sad to see him pass, but hopefully at 71 riding a motorcycle, hopefully he was doing something he loved. So RIP Treat. Well, on to our next topic in our movie news, and this is the No Mo Domino segment. Zazie Beetz just gave an interview over the weekend in which she confirmed she will not be reprising her role as Domino in Deadpool 3. Therefore, she's not going to be Domino in the MCU. This makes me personally a little sad because I think she was one of the best parts of Deadpool 2 as the character of Domino. I loved that character. I love the way that they did it cinematically in that movie. So I'm a little sad to hear that. I mean, I'm very excited to get Deadpool in the MCU, but still a little sad that we're not going to get Zazie Beetz as Domino. And hearing that makes me also think that we're probably not going to get Josh Brolin as Cable going into the MCU. So your guys' thoughts on the parting of Zazie Beetz?
I think this is maybe a misdirect, to be honest with you. Because, one, I think Deadpool in the MCU is going to be an outlier, much like it was in the old X-Men universe, where people were going to come in and out of canon in a way that didn't make any real sense. And so I think even if they recast Domino, eventually you'll see Zazie Beetz as Domino in the MCU. They have too much money and, you know, actors need to work.
You know, it's funny to hear you say that, Moose. I like the gimmick of Domino, but like her character didn't like jump out of the movie for me. Mm-hmm. She felt like a side character. She didn't really feel like, I wasn't like, oh man, walk away from that movie thinking about Domino. Did she do a good job? Yeah, she did fine. And I think her character's powers were funny and interesting, but like, it wasn't like, I'm not crying over the loss of the character because I got Hugh Jackman as Wolverine. Yeah. Anything else is just side dressing. Let these two go to work. Let them go off each other and play off each other. And the funny thing is, it sounds like most of the other people from the previous films are coming back. Atomic Girl, like who played her love interest is coming back. I don't know. They were actually having discussions with the actress who played his girlfriend in the first two. She said she was still negotiating, so I'm not sure if they ever closed that or figured that out. But
well, spoiler alert, she's dead. But they killed her in Deadpool too.
At the very end,
Baccarin.
At the very end, does he go back in time and save her?
Oh, you know what? Yeah. You're right. You're right. That's correct.
So she died, but she's back. So again, Domino, Cable, if they're not back, I think that's fine because that would just be a little bit too much with the Hugh Jackman of all. Who knows? They could have cameos. I think if they do show up, it'll be in a very small, limited role. This is the Hugh Jackman, Ryan Reynolds machine. I can't wait to see it.
Well, speaking of the MCU, recently Chris Hemsworth was asked about his opinions on Thor: Love and Thunder and the criticism that he's faced about the quality of the movie. I'll give you guys the quote and we can kind of talk about what your thoughts are on it. But his response to the quality of the movie was, "We had too much fun. It just became too silly." It's always hard being at the center of it and having a real perspective. He loves the process of making movies, but it's always a ride. And you just don't know how people are going to respond to that much fun. It kind of sounds like they knew that this was going to be a little over the top. I will defend Thor Ragnarok. I think that is such a fun movie. That's one of my favorites of the MCU. It's easily in one of my top fives, and I can sit here and quote that movie over and over and over. But I'm not going to lie. I was so hyped for Thor Love and Thunder because we finally got Taika Waititi coming back to direct what I thought was one of the best entries into the MCU. And it was a flat movie. The jokes didn't hit. The whole screaming goats thing was like, okay, dude, that was funny when Tosh came out in 2004 and aired it on Tosh.0. Like, it just, I don't know. The jokes, there was too much jokes, just didn't quite hit for me. Christian Bale was an awesome Gore the God Butcher, but once again, with Marvel, it's a one and done. You get a cool villain, and then he's dead at the end of it. So, yeah, I'm curious your guys' takes about Chris Hemsworth's view of this movie, but also your thoughts. Like, does he come back to the MCU as Thor after knowing that he made a subpar movie?
Yeah, in that same interview, he said he would come back, but it had to be vastly different than the last film. Mm. And I think that is definitely needed. I'll say Thor: Love and Thunder was one of the biggest disappointments of maybe the entire MCU, because I love Ragnarok just like you. I love that movie. And Thor: Love and Thunder, I remember leaving the theater and immediately being like, that was not good. And the more I talked about it as I was driving home, the more I disliked it and the angrier I got. The tones of that movie are so, the scale is so off. Every time I felt like I was starting to feel something for any kind of character, it was undercut with like a ridiculous joke or a stupid gag. And it just didn't work for me almost any level. And I agree with you, Christian Bale's great, but he's in a different movie.
Yeah.
He's not in the same movie. And it just, Ragnarok really had a perfect balance. Maybe that's because the MCU still had some control. I think Taika went full Taika and was basically allowed to do whatever he wanted, and it was too much. So now they got a course correct. I don't think Taika wanted to make that second movie. He was contracted to. Get somebody else in there, switch it up, make it different, make it more original, and get away from the Taika Thor movies.
Thor: Love and Thunder is dog shit. There is no way around it.
Thank you.
It is the basement. It is the worst MCU movie, and I don't think it's close. It is horrible. I didn't think it was funny. I didn't think tonally it worked. Christian Bale's performance was okay, but it didn't belong in that movie. Mm-hmm. Even Natalie Portman's performance was her best as Jane Foster, and it did not fit in that movie. Nothing fit in that movie except the goats, and they sucked.
Yeah. I agree. The weapon thing was kind of funny. The two weapons kind of being jealous of each other.
That was the best part of the movie for me.
Small moments you could pick out, but once put into the vast film, it doesn't work at all as a whole.
The worst thing about Thor: Love and Thunder to me is the story that they set out with is an inherently emotional and powerful story, especially for a comic book movie.
Yes.
And then they were just like, let's just mock it. Let's just mock the only thing we got going for us. Can't stand it. But Chris Hemsworth will definitely be back as Thor. And I really like Chris Hemsworth, but he has had absolutely zero success whenever he has stepped out of the MCU. And I think so he's going to, and he's a younger guy, so he's going to keep coming back to the MCU until he finds something that can help him break out of it.
I think it'll be a while before we see a Thor solo film again, but he will show up in Avengers, the Kang Dynasty. He'll show up in Secret Invasion, or whatever the third one's, Secret War. He's going to show up as Thor again for sure. But I think it might be a little bit longer till we see just a standalone.
You said something earlier, JT, that kind of jumped to my mind, and it was about studio interference or like the guiding hands of like Kevin Feige, right? And I think he had the guiding hands of Kevin Feige were there for Thor Ragnarok, because if you really go back and look at Thor Ragnarok, there's so much happening in that movie. They have to do World War Hulk. They have to do the gladiator arena. They still have to go save Asgard. Then it's Ragnarok. It's the fall of Asgard. Plus you have Hela in there. Odin dies. So much happens in that movie, but it's executed perfectly. And I agree with you. I think that Feige was like, all right, Taika, you did good on the first one. I'm going to let you go. And then came into the editing room on the last day and was like, oh, shit.
Yeah,
well, this will be a stinker.
He got the Oscar nomination for Jojo Rabbit, and it was like, I can do what I want now.
Yeah. Some more MCU news over the weekend. They certainly came up, or they changed the name of the new Captain America movie from Captain America New World Order, NWO Cap, to Brave New World. Quick thoughts on that one, gents?
Well, it went away from a 90s reference, you know, a 1990s wrestling reference to a 1960s racist novel reference. So, you know, whatever.
Yeah, I know. They basically are interchangeable to me. So whatever. Whatever Marvel execs thinks is going to work best or not offend somebody, sure, go for it.
I am curious. I don't know if you guys saw the picture of Harrison Ford and Anthony Mackie kind of grinding it out behind the scenes. And there's a huge part of me that is really, really hoping that Harrison Ford is going to be the Red Hulk.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, that'd be okay. Yeah, because John Hurt passed away, RIP. And Harrison Ford is a really good casting choice. Although I feel like he was older than he seems older than John Hurt. John Hurt actually looked really good for his age, and I think Ford is definitely trying to show his age. So I'm curious to see that. That'd be a CG Harrison Ford. That'd be interesting.
I mean, that's the only way you're going to get Harrison Ford as a Hulk nowadays at 80.
I wouldn't mind seeing that. That'd be cool. I didn't even think about that.
Well, folks, we're going to move into our next segment, which is the extra movie butter. But before we do that, as always, let's hear from our sponsors.
Four guys rushing through the rush hour, fist by the hand, by the hand. McMuffins fresh and hot, or biscuits golden brown. Breakfast from McDonald's, what a way to get around. Round two,
you're up, guys.
It's a good time for the great taste of McDonald's. Bye-bye, breakfast by the hand.
Try our new Fast Break Combos, bacon, egg, and cheese biscuit or sausage and egg biscuit with regular size coffee and regular size orange juice, just $1.99.
Something has moved in with the Barkley family. And so has terror. Child's Play. You wish it was only make-believe. Rated R. Starts Wednesday, November 9th at a theater near you.
Welcome back, folks, to our favorite segment, the Extra Movie Butter. We're discussing the whole franchise of Transformers right now. And there's no better way than to be able to discuss these eight movies. And yes, we're counting the 1986 Nelson Shin directed animated movie, The Transformers, the movie, in our rankings. We're going to rank these from worst to best. For me, this is like ranking which of these turds tastes the least like dog shit. But I'll give my rankings last. We're going to kick off with Joe Burrow's presidential advisor, Benny Hamlin.
We're up 3 points in the polls since Trump was indicted. All right.
Woo.
So I'm going to start off with my bottom, which I think will be everyone's bottom, I would assume, is, of course, The Last Night. And then number seven, we're going with Mark Wahlberg doing what Mark Wahlberg does, which is make mediocre movies. And then we're going with Age of Extinction. Then Shia LaBeouf, Not Really Caring, is coming in at number six with Transformers Dark of the Moon. Then after that, we start ratcheting up to the actually pretty solid movies. So then I'm going to come in with Bumblebee after that. And then just above Bumblebee, the original Transformers with Shia LaBeouf. Cut running up is, of course, Rise of the Beast. And coming in, King of the Mall, the original, baby, night, the Nelson Shin classic, Transformers the movie.
Well, what about Revenge of the Fallen? Where does that fall in there for you?
It doesn't.
Okay.
I forgot that one.
I was about to say, I'm like, dude, I think he's missing one.
It will come in under Transformers 2.
Fair enough. That is Transformers 2.
You guys are killing me here. All right, I'll do it again.
All right, let's go again, just real quick.
All right, 8. Dark Knight.
Dark Knight.
7, Age of Extinction. 6, Revenge of the Fallen.
Okay.
Then Bumblebee. Then Part 1. Am I missing one? Have I got all of them yet?
You nailed it.
Okay, then Rise of the Beast. Then Transformers the movie. Sorry, okay. America. Sorry.
Oh, good. Again, you're apologizing on behalf of a very subpar franchise. So,
wow.
No. Okay. No worries on that. JT,
I wrote mine down on my notes ad, so I will not miss any here. This was a lot harder than I thought it was going to be, but in some ways it wasn't. And I kind of surprised myself where I put some of these movies. I think I'll have to explain myself a little bit afterwards, but let's just go through it, and then I'll try to explain where I was landing all these. Last but not least, The Last Night. Just a god-awful experience. One of the worst experiences I think I've had in a theater. Right after that, we're going to Age of Extinction. Mark Wahlberg is on the bottom here. Both these movies. Extinction at least had a funny death scene for T.J. Miller. So that was entertaining. And that had the Romeo and Juliet, card.
Oh, you mean the 16-year-old dating a mid-20s?
So at least that gave us something to talk about. Nobody has anything to say about The Last Night. All right, after that, I'm going Dark of the Moon. So far, I'm step-in-step with Benny here. Dark of the Moon is Michael Bay thinking, oh, I need to have a really good story. But Michael Bay doesn't really tell really good stories. And there's too many moments where it just drags. Then I'm going Transformers, the animated movie. And I'm putting this right in the middle of the list, pretty much, because it has one of the most epic beginnings. But Optimus Prime, spoiler, dies in the first 5 minutes. And you'll get Optimus Prime for the whole movie. So I had to put that there. Then I went Bumblebee. Then I went Rise of the Beast, Revenge of the Fallen, and the first Transformers. And I will explain to you why I have Revenge of the Fallen number 2, because I know that's what I need to discuss.
Whoa. Yes, you definitely need to defend that.
Yeah.
And I also need to tell you why I put Bumblebee just below Rise of the Beast, because in my head Bumblebee is a better movie, but there's reasons why I put Beast above it, and we'll get into that
later. I got reasons why I put Beast above it.
Great. So that's my list.
Number 8, Age of Extinction. Number 7, Revenge of the Fallen. Sorry, Age of Extinction. Again, let me get this in there. Mark Wahlberg has a 16-year-old daughter who is dating like a mid-20s. Like, the movie is supposed to take place in Austin, Texas. You bring in Boston's own Mark Wahlberg to play a guy from Austin, Texas, right?
Yeah.
Whose 16-year-old daughter is dating a mid-20s Irish road racer, and it's like, was there no people from Texas that were available to be in this movie?
Listen, you don't have Last Night in your bottom 2. We'll have to talk about that, but keep going.
Revenge of the Fallen is number 7. Wow. The Last Night is number 6.
Wow.
Number 5 is Rise of the Beasts.
What?
Number 4 is Dark of the Moon. Number 3 is The Transformers, the movie. Why is it in my top 3? Because they actually have the cojones to leave Optimus Prime dead. Optimus Prime has died 14 times in these 7 live action movies.
It's true.
He's come back every single time.
Wow.
Number 2 is the 2007 Transformers. And my number 1 is Bumblebee.
Dude, you got to quit drinking. You really got to quit drinking, bro.
I mean, wow. I'm not a huge Transformers fan. I've seen every one of these movies multiple times because I needed to for the Schmodown. Because it was a category. So I watched every one of these movies at least 3 times. And
so
Bumblebee is the only good one.
Just to run it back, your number 1 was Bumblebee. Mine was the original Bay Transformers. And what was yours, Benny?
I'll say that I list the original animated as number one. In truth, I think Rise of the Beast is the best movie out of all of these. But just because of my heart, I put the animated
one. Okay, so we all have different number ones. I don't know where to start. Moose, guide us. Where should we start here?
Okay. All right. Let's all get it out about Wahlberg's, because we all have, at least in our bottom three, we all have the Wahlberg movies, right?
Yeah, bottom two.
They're awful movies. I know some people can say that there's redeeming qualities like Stanley Tucci in Age of Extinction, but sorry, dude. Age of Extinction is supposed to usher in the Dinobots. The Dinobots are in the movie 2.5 minutes. And that's it.
Wait a minute. Again, you have Last Night like in a decent spot here.
Last Night's number six. There's only eight movies.
I need you to explain that because you get Stanley Tucci as Merlin in that movie. So
there's a moment when he's Merlin and he's like, and he's drunk and he's like, oh, I'm sauced. And then he's like, okay, one more sip. And then he just chugs the full bottle.
Wow.
I mean, that part got me laughing. But look, it's like asking if I prefer to grab this handful of crap and take a bite out of it, or if I choose to grab this handful of crap and take a bite out of it. Like, that bottom three, there's not a lot of redeeming qualities in those movies. I think that the CGI in Revenge of the Fallen, and these are all movies, again, I saw all of these movies in theaters. I think the CGI in Revenge of the Fallen is super distracting. It doesn't look good. Like, the storyline is super rushed. They had a hit with Transformers 2007 and were like, we got to go bigger, bolder, larger. We have more of a budget. And then, you know, you have this giant Decepticon that's sucking up all the sand and actually has a pair of balls on it. Like, the military shoots this giant Decepticon in the ass. Like, it's so stupid. It's so stupid. I don't care if Tony Todd was the Fallen. It's such a dumb movie. Like, Wahlberg's movies are far worse, but Revenge of the Fallen for me just, I want to hear your defense of this movie, because I can't find too much redeemable in it.
I only have two words, really. Michael Bay. Michael Bay actually gave a shit when he made the first two movies, I feel like. I think the third one, he tried making a less Bay-type movie and tried making a more of a big summer sci-fi movie that with the presidency and them leaving. And the Transformers literally leave for like a third of the movie. So I feel like Dark of the Moon, just even though he was trying to do something interesting, Revenge of the Fallen is like a stream of consciousness of just action cinema, because the writer's strike was happening. They had no screenwriters. So Bay had to rely completely on his actual filmmaking ability to just make some of the most badass action scenes of the whole series. The biggest explosion, I think, of all the movies is in Revenge of the Fallen. That, to me, makes it a Michael Bay staple and something that's actually worth watching. The movie makes no sense, but as I'm watching it, I don't need it to make sense, because I am just there for the visual spectacle. Whereas when you get to those Mark Wahlberg movies, it just became noise and CGI. I argue if you watch the second Revenge of the Fallen, there actually is a lot of practical effects. So Michael Bay liked to mix in practical back in the early days, especially with those first two films. So to me, Transformers, the first film, let me see, the reason why I have it number one is because it was the first Transformers live action. And I don't care who you are, when you saw that first Transformers movie, and those effects were groundbreaking.
Yeah,
I remember watching that film. I saw it at the Cinerama Dome. It was the first film I ever saw in the Cinerama Dome once I moved to LA. And it's a great memory. The humor is not great. I don't think Michael Bay has a great sense of humor. But it's passable compared to some of his other movies. And I don't know. That first Transformers, the first two, are Michael Bay making two of the best visual Transformer films, in my opinion. I think the stories are crap and for the most part of both of them, but that's not what those movies are made for. Like, this is a toy to sell. This is a movie to sell toys. This is a TV show to sell toys. And I think both those movies are doing just what they need to do. I will say the reason why I put Rise above Bumblebee is because Bumblebee is an 80s Hugh. It's kind of like a John Hughes 80s comedy with Transformers in it. And I think Haley Steinfeld is really good, but I miss that serious tone that Transformers cartoon and even Transformers the movie had. And I feel like Rise of the Beast brought more of that serious tone. Even the villains, and Bumblebee are kind of played for jokes, whereas the villains in Rise of the Beast are freaking villains and scary. And to me, those are how I like my villains in a Transformers movie. So that's why I put Rise, even though I think Bumblebee's actually a better movie, for why I want in a Transformers movie, I give it to Rise over it.
So I'm going to take umbrage with something JTE said about action in these other Transformers movies.
Yes.
Michael Bay may be great at directing action, but he is not good at giant robot fights. All of the Michael Bay movies. Now, and I'm going to say this is, I'm a little older than you guys, so I remember like coming home from, you know, kindergarten, first, second grade, actually watching Transformers when it was on the air. I remember getting these, you know, toys for Christmas. So this is something that I have a lot of nostalgia connected to. But in the Michael Bay movies, you can never tell what is happening in a Transformer fight. It's just a blur of colors and fuzz. And he may still be, but he's into that shaky cam thing really hard in the Transformer movies, and it makes no sense.
I disagree hard with what you're saying now. He is not a Paul Greengrass hand shaky, crazy filmmaker. His stuff is all dollies. Now it's drones. But I will agree with you. When those first films came out, I heard a lot of people say what you said. I couldn't understand what was happening with the action. It just looked like metal things mushed together. I didn't have that experience. I don't know why. I always knew what character was fighting who. I always understood exactly what was going on in the action sequences. I don't know why I didn't have that issue that a lot of people did. But to me, I remember that criticism when the movie actually came out. And I said to myself, am I just weird? Am I different? Because I never had an issue understanding who was fighting who and how and when and why. So for me, that was never an issue. But I will say this. It was a criticism when those first couple movies came out that it was just like, but maybe it's just my whole life I grew up watching action movies and that my eye is just trained to understand exactly what's happening.
I've seen every shitty 80s action movie ever made. And you can't make anything out of these Michael Bay movies.
Yeah, I guess because I didn't have that issue, maybe that's why they work better for me than maybe most people. Because I think Spielberg. Listen, Spielberg did produce these movies. Let's not forget that.
Yeah.
And he's the one who picked Michael Bay to direct Transformers when he decided not to do it. So I do think Michael Bay is a really good filmmaker when it comes to action cinema and moving the camera. For me, I like a director. When I see say you show me a clip from a movie. If you show me a clip of a Brett Ratner movie, I have no idea who directed it. If you said who directed this, I would have no idea. It's basic camera setup. It has no visual style or signature style. You show me a John Woo movie. You show me a Paul Greengrass movie. You show me a Michael Bay movie. If you just show me a clip of that director, I'm going to be like, that's a Paul Greengrass movie. That looks like a Michael Bay movie. Like, he does have his own skill set and his whole signature style. So for me, that already puts him above a lot of directors who just have no style. Like the guy you just saw Renfield, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Travis Knight is the guy who did Bumblebee.
I know.
I think he's a good director and he's fun, but does he have a visual style to himself? Not really. I can't see a scene and be like, oh, that's a Travis Knight movie.
When you watch Bumblebee, like I said, I don't have Bumblebee. I have it in the middle, not the top of my list.
I have it in the middle also.
But when you watch that movie, you can see what every gear is doing when Bumblebee is transforming. You know exactly who is fighting who, and you have at least some semblance of why they're fighting. Like all the Transformers in the Michael Bay movie, they look exactly alike, and they're all smashed together. All he's doing is just like, it's just visual vomit, and then someone yelling the names of the characters from the cartoon in the background.
That sounds like the cartoon to me. So that's a great representation of the movie.
I'm inclined to actually agree with Benny. I think that especially Revenge of the Fallen and Dark of the Moon, like the first Transformers, the CGI looked a little crisper. It didn't quite there was only a couple of Decepticons and there was only a couple of Autobots. So it was kind of a smaller, more contained story with those. Mm-hmm. But then when you get into like Revenge of the Fallen, you know, there's hundreds of Decepticons. When you get into Dark of the Moon, again, there's hundreds of Decepticons. There's an army of Autobots. Like, it all just doesn't mesh very well. It doesn't look good. There's I'll never forget. I have to look away in this scene. There's a scene in Dark of the Moon where it's so shaky cam because it's taken from like it's the sight is from a soldier's gun as he's firing. And every time I see that, I just go, oh, like I lose my stomach. It's just too shaky cam for me. And I'm not totally against like the shaky cam, but it's like a snow globe shake. Like they just had that camera in a snow globe and gave it to some 4-year-old kid and he was shaking it. But I'm going to take this moment to defend Bumblebee. And let me tell you why.
Before you say that, Bumblebee, if you just gave me the first 5 minutes, that might be the best Transformers of all these movies. When you actually are on Cybertron and it's an action sequence, give me a whole movie like that, it would be number one.
Okay, so the War on Cybertron is the only Transformers movie at this juncture I want to see. Anything else is just what? It's just retreading the same storylines. It's just bringing in new characters to be in the movie for 5 minutes. Like it, I just want the War on Cybertron, and I got a taste of that in Bumblebee, and I was hoping that there was going to be more of the Bumblebee because, for me, it's like a kid and their dog type story. Like it's a girl in her car, it's a girl and her dog kind of thing, and I like the like smaller, intimate, and there's only two Decepticons, and they're hunting Bumblebee, and to Benny's point, you can see everything that they're doing. And it gets dark and it gets serious towards the end. I'll tell you that when we get into our next segment. But I have a theory about how Bumblebee will roll into the next movie. No pun intended. Well, yeah, okay. Fuck it, pun intended. But I don't know. I thought there was actual emotion. There was actual story in Bumblebee. The rest of these movies are just, To all of your guys' point, it's just all visual vomit.
I was going to say, is a lot of the harsh language I'm using, but I actually only really genuinely dislike one of the Transformers movies, and that's The Last Knight. That is garbage. I don't ever want to watch it again, but like if you put on any of the other Transformers movies, I won't complain about sitting through them again. Like a lot of the Michael Bay ones wouldn't be like my first choice, but I don't mind watching them again. And there are like 3 or 4 in here I genuinely enjoy. I just, you know, I think the Michael Bay ones, there was a lot of missed opportunities after the first one.
Oh, for sure. I mean, Michael Bay introduced so many different ideas and concepts and just never stuck with any of them. I mean, that for me was the problem, I think, with the Michael Bay movies was you just, it'd be like, oh, okay, so this is about like, commercialism and global warming. No, it's not. Like there was just so many things that Bay like introduced into his movies and just never stuck with. I know I said it earlier, but like Age of Extinction, this is supposed to be the Dinobots movie. Instead, it's Optimus Prime story again. And you'll hear kind of that same similar criticism when we review Rise of the Beasts for me, because it's just that was supposed to be the Beasts movie. They were in the movie 10 minutes. Once again, it's Optimus Prime story. All of these continue to come back to Prime's story, and you're just rehashing the same thing. Oh, Prime is going to sacrifice himself for the good of everybody. Oh, but he doesn't. Like, he survives. Like, it's the same story in every single one of these Transform movies. At least Bumblebee did something different, and they kept Prime to a minimal, and it was just a closed story between a girl and her car, and I really, really enjoyed that, and, you know, the story behind like Haley Steinfeld's father passing in this movie and her having to deal with that trauma and Bumblebee helping her through that. I don't know. That was actually good storytelling. And maybe I'm expecting too much from a franchise with giant fighting robots. But
it's the best reviewed movie. I think it's like in the 90s on Rotten Tomatoes. And I argued it probably is from beginning to end, the best story of all the films that has probably the best, you know, character work. I guess I just don't need that as much in my Transformers movie. Yeah. I think a lot of these movies rely on the human element a little bit too much. I think we all would just want a Transformers movie with a lot of action on Cybertron and like some, you know, crazy ass battle sequences. But Rise of the Beast, I think, made the villains scary again. It made like the bad guys actually something I feared. Where in some of these earlier films, they're kind of, to me, kind of a joke and were played for laughs and never really taken seriously. And I think Rise of the Beast at least takes that tone and makes it more. If the 80s film, if Bumblebee was an 80s comedy, but also a Transformers movie, this 90s set Rise of the Beast was like a 90s action movie with Transformers. And it also had a pretty good, interesting human story element to it too, but very different from the Haley Steinfeld one. A more adult one, I guess, in some ways, because this guy's an ex-soldier and he's trying to take care of his family. So there was some good stuff there. I'll get that more into the review, so I won't jump into too much more of that. But yeah, Bumblebee's great. Like I agree with, like, the only two here I don't really would never watch again are Last Night and Age of Extinction. Mm. I could watch the rest of them and give them a shot and have some fun with them. Even though Dark of the Moon is like in the middle towards the back half for me, there's some really cool sequences in that movie. The only issue I had that movie is there's the beginning and the middle. There's just a long period where it's like just Sam Witwicky trying to get a job and dealing with his relationship. And I'm just like, get that stuff out of here. Just give me the action set piece. And then the ending of Dark of the Moon is like this huge Chicago invasion. And I don't know, for some reason, it just didn't work for me as much as it did like the first couple films, which I thought had a better pace to it. And yeah, I don't know. I think Dark of the Moon is like 3 hours. Too long. I don't need a 3-hour Transformers movie. Get me under 2 hours or just over 2 hours. That's perfect.
Dude, every one of these movies is like 3 hours.
The first one, I think, is just over two. Bumblebee is like at two. Rise, yeah, Bumblebee is at two. Rise is like 210. Like, that's where you need to be. Dark of the spot. Last Night, Age of Extinction, and what was that one I said? Last Night, Age of Extinction, and Dark of the Moon are like closer to 2.5, 2.45. And that's too much.
Well, folks, we're going to take a break. We're going to hear from our sponsors again, and then we're going to jump head on into the spoiler review of Transformers Rise of the Beast.
Coming to video stores everywhere, Tom Cruise, in a video event you've been waiting for. Cocktail. Rent it on video cassette.
See it tonight at Major Video, El Paso's Super Video Stores.
Hall of Fame, Destro, Cobra Mercenary, Status, Escaped. You've got to track him down. Your ace, Hotshot Fighter Jock, coming high with flight helmet, gun blazing. Or your Storm Shadow, Ninja, blast like thunder, strike like lightning. Or your Gung Ho, 100% Marine, highly decorated, the ultimate fighting machine, 12 inches tall. It's a whole new way to play.
Destro's gone, and all that's left is his mask.
I wonder what he looks like.
Find out with the G.I. Joe Hall of Fame collection, each sold separately.
Welcome back to our spoiler review of Transformers Rise of the Beasts. Now, it's no shock that they keep putting out these Transformers movies. They make money. To date, the franchise is at $4.9 billion earned at the box office. The budget for Rise of the Beast was $295 million. That includes the marketing budget. They're already halfway there. It's easily going to surpass that and more, especially with the global box office. It'll drop off because I think those Transformers fans who saw it this weekend, it'll do decent. It'll probably be in second place this weekend, but of course it's going to earn its money internationally. Now, we all saw this movie. I'd like to get your guys' thoughts first off on the human component of this movie. Before we even get into the beasts, before we even get into the CGI, to the direction, because this was a Michael Bay produced, not directed, Transformers franchise. We've got some new actors coming in, right? Anthony Ramos, Dominique Fishbeck. Those are your kind of two big names in this. Anthony Ramos, we knew from Into the Heights, making, you know, a good name for himself. Good, smart choice for a follow-up to that movie, because that was an insanely popular movie. I really enjoyed that movie. I really hope Anthony Ramos turns out to be a huge star. And I'm a huge Dominique Fishbeck fan. I don't know. Have you guys seen Swarm?
No, but I've seen a lot of this. I've heard a lot about it, but I have not seen it.
Whew. Okay.
I've seen the original 70s Swarm.
Killer Bees.
A little different, yeah. But I do want to get your takes. JT, I'm going to start with you. Let's talk about the human component in this. Anthony Ramos, did this work for you?
Yeah, so I won't get into spoilers. I'll just do my overall thoughts and who I thought of these people. I thought he was really good in this film because I'll be honest, I wasn't a huge fan of In the Heights. Not because of him. I just had issues with where that movie went. And I'm not a huge fan of musicals. So I kind of went into this movie with a clean slate with him. And I was like, all right, let's see what you got. And I thought it was really charming, really funny. And he could even play the physical role really well. It's different than the Shia LaBeouf, who's very over the top and yelling. He's a very cool, collected character who's put in a position that, you know, he has to find a way to help his younger brother in this movie. And I thought he was really good. I thought he was really funny. I thought he was charming. I love the 90s setting of this film and the music he was listening to. He's listening to just old school 90s hip hop. You're opening up with Wu-Tang, you know, Cream, Dollar Bill. I'm like, oh man, this was me in the 90s, except for I'm a white kid from the suburbs. So this is who I wanted to be in the 90s. But I thought he was really good. I thought the girl from Swarm, I can't remember her name, but say it again.
Dominique Fishback.
Okay. I just want to make sure I'm saying it right. I thought she's good in it. And I think she's probably really good in that show, but I think she's given a lot less character development in this and is kind of basically just there to be the guide in a lot of ways. So she's good, but Anthony Ramos really kind of stole the movie for me as far as lead.
Benny, how about you?
I really appreciated the humans in this. Like, outside of Shia LaBeouf and the first Michael Bay ones, I felt like the humans have generally been a really big distraction in the movies. A negative, you know, they take away more than they give, especially Mark Wahlberg. I don't think he can carry a movie like this, but that's just my own personal thing. And the humans, they had a big part to play, and they were very front and center in the cartoon, you know, the Wikis were. But Anthony, I messed up his name. I was got the names confused, but he jumped off the screen to me. Like, the when I was watching him in here, I didn't feel like, okay, I got to get to the Transformers, shut this guy up. I was actually interested in what he was going and doing. And that's hard to pull off. You got to have some acting chops, like in a movie like this, to not make people just say, get off the screen. I want the Transformers. So I was really pleased with how he carried the role, and he's by far the best human so far in the Transformer movies. Dominique Fishback, she was fine. She did a great job. I agree with JT either. You know, she wasn't given a lot to do other than say, hey, look, I found this magic thing.
Yeah.
But she did that very well. So I have no complaints about her performance. I thought it was solid, but he jumped off the screen for me in this. So I am really interested to see what he does going forward, because, you know, In the Heights is not up my alley at all. But I really enjoyed his performance in that, even though that movie is definitely not written and made for me.
Well, for me, Anthony Ramos, I think, was the highlight of the movie, or at least his the human component highlight of this movie. And his relationship with his younger brother was great. I would have really liked to have seen a little bit of an adventure of Anthony Ramos and his little brother together on this mission with the Autobots. Yeah, of course, Dominique Fishback, she's great with what she's given, and she's given very little. She understands the Stargate. She understands how to shut the Stargate. She fits conveniently in the cave to go turn off the Stargate. There you go. You got it. You nailed it. Great job. I do hope that they expand a little bit with her character if they continue using Dominique Fishback in this franchise. I obviously will go into some spoilers a little bit in a few minutes with in regards to what is going to happen with Anthony Ramos's character. Mm-hmm. There wasn't like a lot of emotional attachment between Anthony Ramos and Pete Davidson's Mirage for me.
Yeah. Well, I will say Mirage is like a joke. Everything that comes out of his mouth is a joke. There's almost no moment where he tries to be serious. And because of that, he just comes off like a joke robot. And it's like, just once I wanted to, like, hey, not every line has to be a joke or, you know, a quip. Just give me one moment of actual real talk and then go back to your jokes. It's just joke, 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 joke every second.
And it bothered me the whole time. I have read a lot of things that saying like we'll go on to the robots now, the Autobots and Decepticons, and I'm sorry, the Pete Davidson thing was annoying. He had one good joke, and that was when he was like, you were inside of me. Like, that was funny, but the rest of it was just joke, 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 and it was so annoying. And once I realized it was Pete Davidson, and I already am not a huge Pete Davidson fan, but once I realized, I like picked out his voice and was like, ah, oh, that's Pete Davidson. The jokes were just even worse for me.
Oh, no.
And so when he finally dies at the end, it's like, well, that'll shut him up. That was like my, like, the...
Oh, spoiler.
Yeah, okay, so...
We're full on spoilers.
We're in the spoiler segment already. So, yeah, so I didn't have the attachment like you get with Bumblebee. And I thought the early fake out of killing Bumblebee was, okay, Bumblebee is usually the one that has the human connection.
Mm-hmm.
They removed him and they were like, we're going to replace him with this jabbering idiot that is Mirage. And it did not work for me. And then surprise, because Bumblebee can't die. He comes back at the end and saves the day. I mean, it was a cool saving of the day, but yeah, the whole thing didn't work. What did work for me, however, though, was Mirage is dying and he transfers his exoskeleton to Noah, to Anthony Ramos's character.
Yeah, that was cool.
That was cool. And that was a super throwback to the 1986 movie where like the humans actually have these like exoskeletons and like they work and they live with the Autobots.
Well, listen,
that was super cool because it finally gave the humans like a dog in the fight. Like they could actually hold their own as opposed to just being these annoying little, you know, creatures running around during these big, you know, tentpole fights.
Listen, since we're already in spoilers, I'm going to go ahead and say that's a throwback to the 1986 movie. We're talking about Unicron. The main villain of this film is Unicron from the 1986 movie. So already this movie had things that I was like excited about from the get-go because I mean, it was in the trailer. So when I saw Unicron was in this movie, I was like, okay, they're not messing around. And it's weird because Bake kind of did his version of Unicron in the older ones. It just that obviously went nowhere, so it ended. So it's nice to see them go back and do it right. And then we get the Peter Dinklage as his like Scrooge or Scourge, whatever his name is. And he's a freaking pretty good villain and actually kicks Optimus Prime's ass from the very get-go. And I agree with you, the Bumblebee thing was kind of lame because he's in the movies after this. Like, why are you killing these freaking Transformers just when we know they're going to come back? And if not by the end of the movie, they're going to be back by the next film at least. So, like, and you said earlier, Optimus Prime has died like in half these movies. It's just like, we don't need you to kill off one of these Transformers or try to seem like you're going to kill off to get us invested. We're invested because we like Transformers. So right. I just think it's dumb. But yeah, Unicron. I want to hear what Benny thinks of Pete Davidson's character because I thought he was funny in the beginning and I thought he had some good jokes. It was just an onslaught of them, and I just needed him to not be a joke machine every single time.
Okay. So I'm going to go off on a little bit of a tangent here, so bear with me.
Please do.
So, one, I didn't mind Pete Davidson because there are several of the old Transformers that do that, like in the cartoon, that just are constantly like yammering, never shut up, talk really fast.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think in the spirit of the original Transformers that it's out of place to have a character do that. So I didn't mind it. And I am old enough that I don't know why Pete Davidson is famous. I literally don't know. Like, just at least to me, it seemed like a year ago, he just started showing up in things. And I don't really know why. But it doesn't bother me. I found a lot of the jokes to be, you know, cute and humorous. And I thought that they developed a pretty decent rapport. So I enjoyed it. But I will tell you this, that Unicron being in this movie is very important because Bumblebee was very much a soft reboot of the Michael Bay ones. Like it kept the door open for, you know, it just being a continuation of those stories. When they brought Unicron in this, since it was in, you know, the last night, I think that was their way of saying, no, Bumblebee is the first part of our story, and we're in a completely new universe now that has nothing to do with the Michael Bay movies. So I was really excited when they had that 80s cartoon version of Unicron coming out, because one, it broke away from all of the stuff that with the Shia LaBeouf, all the Mark Wahlberg stuff, and said, we're going to do our own thing now. And I think that's going to be really important going forward, like when we talk about what happened at the end, because I think by doing that, They just rebooted two franchises at one time, which was a really impressive move to me.
Yeah, it's weird. I feel like they got their wires crossed a little bit because all the designs are basically the same. And they're purposely putting these in different decades. Mm-hmm. But they're kind of putting themselves in a corner here because I don't think these movies are going to match up with those Transformer movies. If you watched them, if you didn't go by release order and you just went by the order of the actual, you know, what time set they're set in, it kind of works. Like, you watch the 80s Bumblebee, you watch the 90s Rise of the Beast, and then you get to the Transformers movies. Some things make sense, some things don't. For instance, the beginning of the Michael Bay movie, you see them land on Earth, yeah, and you see them scan these cars that they become. Why are they these cars already? Why are they already these cars in the Earth earlier? I don't remember Transformers robots. Why do they look like on Cybertron? Why do they look like trucks? Why do they look like, you know, Camaros or whatever?
On Cybertron, they do not.
They don't, but in the Bumblebee, they are already like that in the beginning.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like, they are slowly breaking away from the mic. They made that Bumblebee one to say, we're going to throw this out here in a completely different style.
Yeah,
and see if there's enough interest we can keep this going before we have to shelve it for a few years. Mm-hmm. And it worked. People really liked it. And so with this one, they are finally cutting that cord. So I think at some point you're going to get flashbacks to when they originally came prior to Bumblebee. And you're going to keep seeing the decade hopping going forward to the point that they're in the same decade as those Michael Bay movies. And they're just going to make it really clear that this is a completely new franchise. It doesn't have anything to do with that.
Yeah, I'm very curious how that works. I will say, when I said earlier when we're doing our rankings, I think I like this movie more than Bumblebee just because I like the tone and the more serious tone to the action. And the 90s setting, I think Hailee Steinfeld is amazing. I think she's actually one of my favorite young actresses. I think she's so good in Bumblebee. But that movie just had it was going for a different tone with John Cena. And, you know, he's kind of played like as a joke in some ways, even though he works for the government and everything. I just think this one had like a 90s action tone to it. It felt like a movie that took place in the 90s and had a 90s tone for the action. When action goes down in this movie, it didn't feel like a fun action movie. It felt like, oh man, someone's going to get messed up and the action's going to be really grounded and cool, even though it's Transformers.
The reason that this is my favorite Transformers movies of all time, if we take all of nostalgia out of it, is Bumblebee is a very good movie, but it does have a distinctly different tone from what the Transformers were in the cartoons going yes. forward. This very much has that exact tone. Like, if you plopped this movie and released it in 1980s, you obviously couldn't with technology, but when kids went out and saw it, they would be like, oh yeah, this is a Transformers movie. This is so cool. It really feels like you're in that original universe created. And so like when I went home, you know, from watching this movie and my wife was like, how was that movie? I was like, it's great. It's so great. And obviously it's a stupid movie and there's a lot of things that make no sense in it.
Yeah.
But the nostalgia waves hit me because it really felt like I had just come home, you know, I'd sat down and I just marathoned season one of the cartoon. And I loved that so much.
Yeah. And we haven't really talked about the Beast at all. Like, Moose, did the Beast work for you in this movie? Because it's called Rise of the Beast.
Okay. So I said it earlier. You introduce something like the Maximals, right? Yeah. And these beasts, right? These are such cool looking creatures. And yes, the look of them was sharp. The look of all of these characters in this movie, the CGI in this movie is on point. And I actually like it's slightly different than the Bay look of the Transformers. It looks a little more tactical. It looks like they're a little more rounded. There's not a lot of like bulky like components to them. So like I actually like the way that they look quite a bit. My biggest problem is we get like 10 minutes of the Maximals. We start the movie with Optimus Primal, right? And it's Ron Perlman. And if you're going to have anybody go voice to voice against Peter Cullen as a Prime, Ron Perlman is a pretty solid choice as Optimal Primal. But we see that And then there's just kind of the brief introduction. We get a little bit of Michelle Yeoh, and she's dead. And then we get the battle at the end with the Maximals. And I don't know. I want a little bit more out of it. I did enjoy like that the Maximals have been here the whole time, right? They've been here for a million years. They've lived and coexisted with humans in this little village. I like that Optimus is a little bit more of a dick in this one. Doesn't trust humans, calls us inferior.
Yeah.
And it's more, you know, Optimus Primal who kind of turns him a little bit into the actual leader of the Autobots and cares a little bit more for the humans. I like the whole beasts, like segments of the movie. I thought it worked quite well. I thought that was the best part of the movie. Just there wasn't enough of it.
Here's where I'll disagree a little bit. It's called Rise of the Beast. So you get them in the beginning, and they do kind of come in towards the halfway point. And when they finally get to Peru and they start, you know, figuring out what to do. But delivered at the end. I thought the third act action sequence, they gave all those characters some pretty cool sequences. Not just the Beast, but like even the original Transformers. So because that last action set piece, I was very much happy with it, and it gave me what I kind of wanted to see from these Transformers and the Beasts. I was able to be like, okay, this is the rise of the Beasts. This is the introduction to them, and you gave some really cool action at the end with them. So it was just enough for me. If this was just called Rise of the Beasts, underlined Transformers, then I can understand being like, oh, I would like a little more of the Beasts.
I would say if you view this as the eighth movie in the franchise, like what they did with Optimus Prime, doesn't make a lot of sense. But if you look at this as Bumblebee being film number one in this franchise, Optimus Prime is in that for 10 minutes.
Yeah.
And there's no character growth. So he needed an arc as far as the franchise is concerned, where he is, okay, I'm committed to humanity now. But what it does is just by giving you a glimpse of the Beast, it opens the door up by saying, okay, there's the Beast here, and then the next movie, I think we're going to get the Dinobots and the Beast. So then you have like all kinds of Transformers glory happening. I think this is the Beast are much less well known than the Autobots or the Dinobots. And I think this is to get their foot in the door so they're not completely lost when they bring in the Dinobots as the heavy hitter in the next movie.
Well, if we're going to talk about the next movie, let's talk about the last 2-3 minutes of this film. Okay. So I saw this Thursday night in IMAX screen, sold out, basically sold out. And I'm thinking at the very end here, you know, he tries to get a security job at the beginning. At the end, he's being interviewed once again from the guy from House of Cards. I don't remember what his name is, but he was in House of Cards. And I'm thinking to myself, Sector 7. I'm like, this is Sector 7. This is how it's going to tie into the Michael Bay movies. Okay, I get it. I mean, like, whatever. He hits the button. He's like, we're not your usual government. And I'm like, oh, yeah, Sector 7. Totally got it. Because Sector 7 knew about Transformers all the time. And when he flipped that card over and it said G.I. Joe, my theater lost its mind. I don't know what your guys' theater was like. It was, you know, might not have been packed like mine. But, you know, if you're going opening night, it's the fans, the Transformer fans are there. So the energy in that theater, I was sitting next to people I didn't even know. And I was looking at him like, can you believe this? Oh, shit. No, I'm like, high five each other. We were like, what? No. So, G.I. Joe, crossing over with Transformers. Stephen Caple Jr., apparently the director, who I think did a really good job directing this film, he really pushed for it. And I think he's even going to be, he's already in talks for the next Transformers movie. Now, is that going to be a Transformers G.I. Joe movie? Are they going to try to do a new G.I. Joe film and then cross it over with Transformers? What do you guys think is the best way they should integrate the G.I. Joe into the Transformers? And what was your reaction to that moment?
I loved that moment.
Yes.
Because literally as a kid, like the after school lineup was Transformers and G.I. Joe.
Yeah, hell yeah.
So like, you know, I'm pretty quiet when it comes into theaters, but inside I was like, yes. Now, I will say the one thing that gives me pause is the Mirage suit, because I think what set the, you know, the Channing Tatum G.I. Joe franchise off in an awful direction is they were in these huge tech suits. which did not exist in G.I. Joe, and it felt made it feel like a bastardized version of it.
Mm-hmm.
So if they're going to all be in Mirage suits, you know, when they introduce G.I. Joe, I want no part of it. But I think the G.I. Joe is born to be a billion-dollar franchise. Like, it has everything that you could want for a summer blockbuster if done well. And it is also hands down, it and He-Man are neck and neck for the greatest toy line in the history of humanity.
I would throw Ninja Turtles in there also, but I agree with you.
Yeah, but I will say this. I think you need to have them stand alone at first, because there are a lot of characters and there is a lot of lore in the G.I. Joe movies, and trying to crowd that in with Transformers and have people connect to those characters, it's going to be very hard to do. But if you give like this new Transformers franchise a couple movies, get the Dinobots going, you know, get Megatron and the Decepticons back up running, and then really introduce G.I. Joe the way they're meant to be introduced, I think you could have something special when they finally cross over. But that's just me. But I'm a shill for this stuff.
Moose?
So when it was revealed that it was a G.I. Joe card, I audibly went, oh, come on.
You gotta stop drinking.
Okay, there's not been a single like redeeming moment in any of the G.I. Joe movies. There's not one good G.I. Joe movie.
But I think this is what Benny said, this is a chance to reboot it.
I don't disagree, but my first reaction was like, oh, come on, Hasbro. Like, what's next? Is Stretch Armstrong going to find his way like into the Transformers franchise too? Now, that being said, am I going to see G.I. Joe opening night? Yeah, of course. I mean, do I want to now, like, having, you know, a day to digest my thoughts on this? I still think that this is a really stupid cash grab, but I'm going to see it. I'm going to be optimistic. I've had some time to put some thought into this. I absolutely think that Anthony Ramos, there will be a standalone G.I. Joe movie. However, I also think that we're going to get John Cena back from Bumblebee, and he is going to be in the G.I. Joes.
Oh.
He also has experiences against Decepticons and Autobots. So if this is a continuation of your Bumblebee verse, right? Why wouldn't you bring back a big star like John Cena to anchor the G.I. Joe movies? And then again, there's Anthony Ramos, there's John Cena, there's tie-in between the Transformers franchise and now the G.I. Joe franchise. Like I said, am I like rushing out to theaters to see this? No. Will I see it? Yes. Will I need to learn to shut off my brain is from what I'm hearing. Or maybe I need to stop drinking, Benny, to your point. But yeah, so audibly I went, oh, come on, when I saw the card. The more I've like had time to be able to digest my thoughts on this, the more I think, okay, you know what? These franchises really could work well together. Where I'm a little hesitant is both of the G.I. Joe movies, or all three of them. Well, Snake Eyes was just boring. I don't know. I think I fell asleep six times in that movie. And then woke up during the action sequence and fell asleep for seventh. But the first two are just, the technology is so outlandish that the Joes possess. And that wasn't, to your point, Benny, that wasn't what the Joes were when I played with G.I. Joes when I was a kid. I had a ton of G.I. Joes. I stole them from my older brother. And so I'm kind of in the same boat. Like, I want to see this elite like fighting force known as the Joes. Of course, you know, when you bring these two franchises together, it's going to be the Joes versus the Transformers at first. And then they're going to see a common enemy, and then they're going to team up, and it's, you know, you're going to have that big fight out. And it, but I am interested in this. My first reaction is just like, oh, this is a stupid cash grab. Like, and I just started thinking like, okay, well, the Power Rangers are in Hasbro. Like, are the Power Rangers going to join this universe? Like, is this a Hasbro shared universe? The little brother was wearing a Power Rangers shirt during the beginning of the movie. So I already was like, when I saw that, I was like, oh.
Hey, that was decade appropriate. That was 90s.
Yeah, there's Power product Rangers placement.
Here's the thing. Stephen Cable Jr. really impressed me as a director with this film. He had a really good eye for the characters. He had a really good eye for the action sequences. He directed Creed 2, which I also thought was a really good, it wasn't as good as Creed, but it was a really good sequel. I think Hasbro has, they see the potential of Stephen Cable Jr. I think they're going to have him shepherd these next few films. And I trust him. So that's why I feel better about it than just a cash grab. I feel like in his hands, he can make something really cool, fun, and probably make a G.I. Joe movie like we've always wanted to see. Mm-hmm. I don't like the G.I. Joe sequel with The Rock. I thought that was pretty bad. I kind of like the first one because Steven Sommers kind of put his stamp on it a little bit. You watch The Mummy and Val Helsing. They're like ADHD movies, like explosion every 10 seconds. So like, the first G.I. Joe is a guilty pleasure. It's not good. I'm not saying it's good.
No, it's but, not.
But it's so ridiculous and so over the top that I could actually enjoy it to a degree for how insane it is. Whereas like the second film, not so much. So G.I. Joe to me, I think is just due for a reboot. I'm excited for him to have it and him, because if he can, he's, in my opinion, he's made one of the best Transformers movies. I think he has it in him to make one of the better G.I. Joe movies. Will they do a standalone? I don't know. I could see maybe introducing G.I. Joe a little bit into the next Transformers movie and then having that spring off to its own film, almost like Test the Waters kind of thing.
Oh, but sure.
I don't know. I'm not sure what their plans are going to be. And then I know Stephen Cable Jr. definitely has plans, but he can't talk about them right now. He said in interviews, you know, since this weekend that, you know, he's got ideas. So at the end of the day, I'm a kid who loved G.I. Joe and Transformers. Those cartoons were made to sell toys. Mm-hmm. These movies are just made to sell tickets. So I'm okay with it. So bring it on. I want to see a new, I want to see G.I. Joe done right. And if doing that and you could mix that with the Transformers, I'm going to be there opening day, first showing. I cannot wait.
Well, I think we're going to be wrapping up. Let's give our final thoughts about Transformers Rise of the Beasts. Benny, I'm going to start with you. This obviously struck an emotional chord with you, right? A nostalgic chord with you. I think you're the perfect guy to lead us off in the segment, buddy.
Yeah, definitely go out and see Rise of the Beast if you are an old Transformers fan, you know, from the 80s and have that nostalgia kick. It does make you feel like you're sitting down and watching the cartoon again. And I was just, you know, this was another movie that I went out and watched because of this podcast. I probably wouldn't have, I would have waited the home video if we weren't doing this podcast on it. And I was over the moon, though, that I went out and seen it. Just because it made me feel like a kid again, and I left smiling. And if you can do that for, you know, an $8 matinee, that is a huge win, man. So I encourage everyone, go out and see it, especially if you have an attachment to these toys or the franchise as a whole.
JT, final thoughts.
Yeah, is the plot original? No. Was I at times just waiting for the next action sequence because I love seeing the Transformers battle in this thing? Absolutely. But he delivers on those action sequences, and it felt closer to the Bay action than it did in Bumblebee, but in a different way than Bay, a more grounded, scary, kind of cool way. It did feel like a lot of ways the cartoon come to life in live action, even more so in some ways than the Michael Bay movies, because those feel like Michael Bay movies with Transformers. This felt more like a Transformer movie that I've been waiting since I was a kid. So does Pete Davidson do way too many jokes and come annoying at times? For me, yes, he did. I wish he would have just not said a joke every 10 seconds. But the skeleton is here for almost a jumping pad for a really great Transformers series. Bumblebee was the beginning. This is the realization, and I'm excited to see where it goes from here, especially with the G.I. Joe thing. That got me super excited. I can't help it. Just thinking of how those action sequences could, I'm going to see Duke inside Optimus Prime shooting a bazooka out the window. Then they'll drive off a bridge. Duke will jump out with a parachute as Optimus turns into Optimus midair. I'm calling it now. I can't wait to see it.
Do we get a Jason Momoa Zartan?
Oh, man.
Oh, man. Please and thank you.
I'll take it. I enjoyed it. That's all I'm saying. Go see it. Go for matinee. Go see it in IMAX. And if you can't afford it, check out whenever it's streaming on Paramount Plus. It's really good.
I definitely think I need to go in maybe with fresh eyes, because as I view the Transformers franchise. It's just one stinker after another. And then you finally get one that comes along like a Bumblebee and it's great. But then what I started, what I do like in my head is I basically Bumblebee versus the rest, as opposed to, I like your mindset, Benny, where Bumblebee is the start of a whole new Transformers universe. After I've had time to think about it, I do like the idea of the G.I. Joe Transformers. My first reaction was and I was like, oh, come on. But then the more I think about it, the more that these two franchises really do work together. What I don't want to see is a Hasbro universe. Keep it with G.I. Joe and Transformers only. The things that worked for me in this movie, the action sequences were the best, I think, that we've had in any of the Transformers movies. I really, really, really dug the Terracons. You know, Peter Dinklage was kind of, they're almost like heralds of Galactus. They're sent to these worlds in advance, you know, and they look like they're junkyard scrap. And if you remember the like 1980s Transformers movies, there was the Junkticons, right? That like just kind of lived around Unicron. And so these look, these are all Autobots and Decepticons or whatever they call the Transformers. They're all Transformers from other planets that Unicron has taken and enslaved those people. So I thought they looked great. I thought they were menacing. I liked that there was a core group of these Terracons that were just badass. There was like three of them and all three of them were awesome. And it took all the beasts and the Autobots to like bring them down. Of course, I didn't like the Bumblebee fake out. Did not like Optimus going, I'm going to sacrifice myself. Oh, but then you didn't. Like, come on. If you're starting over again, don't pull the yo-yo on us. Kill him or don't kill him. Have the nuts to stick to one story or the other. Just don't even try the whole sacrifice thing anymore. But overall, it's not the worst Transformers movie by far. I mean, we all agree that there are at least three or four that are far, far, far less superior than this movie. And again, I think I'm going to go in and watch it again with kind of your guys' like excitement towards this type of like property and not really try to, I think for me, I hold a lot of the stink over the Transformers. Like there's just this cloud of like, it's the shit cloud from what's the movie with Roy?
Green Lantern?
No, well, okay, we'll go with that one. But yeah, I really do want to like it as much as you guys. You guys is like for this is so infectious. But I think for me, like I do like a little more like explanation in my movies. And it's like Fast X, like you got to turn off your brain. But for me, it was like, I still view Fast X as like not a great movie going experience. There are elements of that movie that is fun. There are elements of this movie that are a ton of fun. And yeah, will I go out and see the next movie? Of course I will. Will I go out and see the G.I. Joe movie? Absolutely.
Yeah, you know, I just want to add that I wasn't really super excited for this movie. I kind of was like, I guess I got to go see this. It's new Transformers. Every time the trailer came on in the last few months, I was just like, oh, okay, yeah, let's get through this trailer. I want to see the Oppenheimer trailer. I want to see the Mission Impossible trailer. I wasn't really excited for it. So I remember going on Thursday night being like, I just hope it's not bad. Maybe I had lower expectations, but 30 minutes into the movie, I was like, this is actually pretty good. I'm like, if they can keep this up, I'm going to be pretty happy after this. And then end with a G.I. Joe, and I was thrilled.
There are two of these movies that we've done on this podcast now that I would not have gone out and seen if we weren't doing this podcast. And this is one of them. So I don't regret going and seeing it. I'll say that. That's my endorsement of the movie. Well, folks, we're going to wrap it up. Thank you so much for joining us. Next week is going to be The Flash. We're going to be discussing DC movies. And we're going to have a special guest, John the Outlaw Rocha. Be sure to tune in. Leave us a comment. We'll read them on air for you. We're very happy to those of you that are subscribing to this podcast. We're going to keep coming out every week with it. But on behalf of the one and only Benley Hamlin, on behalf of the backwards hat style guru himself, JTE, I am Mark the Moose Haas saying, let's roll.
Have a good night, everybody.
Yo, Joe.